All right, it's 6:30, so we will get started. Welcome to Planning Commission, everybody, and we will start with the pledge led by Commissioner Tucker.
Please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and we will move to agenda item 2, public comments. This is for any comments that are not pertaining to an agenda item. Okay, seeing as there's none, we will move to number 3, presentation and a public comment period of the I-15 reconstruction, Horrocks Engineering and the Langdon Group.
Did all of that without that? My name is Shane Marshall.
Wow.
I am with Horrocks Engineers. Tonight we're here representing the Utah Department of Transportation. So you get the B team. Sorry. There's a bunch of these meetings going around in Davis County and we had to split up. So you get Katie and I, which we'll fill in as best we can. I'm going to walk through this presentation, but if any time you want to stop me and ask a question, please do. This is a much better presentation if we have a dialogue than it is for me just chatting away. So stop anytime and we will back up or we will talk through the slides. So tonight we're going to talk about a couple of things. The purpose of the study, what we know so far, and give you a sense of where you can provide both informal and formal feedback. So the purpose of the study, we are looking at an environmental impact statement from Farmington all the way down to North Salt or Forth South and Salt Lake. As we evaluate the merits of the project, we're keeping in mind 4 drivers that the Utah Department of Transportation has set forth, and that they are better mobility. Of course, they're about making transportation better. And what's interesting about that first little bullet there, it's not just a car. This project is not just about a car, not just about vehicles, but it's about all kinds of transportation, buses, active transportation, and vehicles. The department wants to make sure we have good health, that we have good quality transportation systems that promote good health, that we continue to connect communities throughout the corridor, and that if we do all these things, we end up with a strong economy. So those are the 4 drivers behind the project. This map on the right shows the boundaries of the study. Like I said, 89, Farmington on the north end, all the way down to 4 South in Salt Lake. So it's about 16 miles long. East-west gets a little bit gray, because if you can't really draw hard and fast lines east-west. Typically, we look at the first intersection off of an interchange, so both east and west. But sometimes the solution you come up with doesn't tie in really nicely at that spot, so you have to extend a little bit further east-west. So the study area, while it shows a nice sharp line, is somewhat up for debate and up for discussion. But generally, north to south, those are the limits. East to west, those are the limits. So where we're at in this study, and I'm going to use the word project throughout this thing because I just can't figure out how to say study instead of project sometimes. So for the record, when I say project, I mean study. I've been corrected multiple times, so I'm just going to do that right up front. We're in the NEPA process, which is the National Environmental Policy Act process, which starts formally in scoping, and that's where we're at today. But this project has actually started many, many years ago through the planning process with the MPO and the cities and the counties in Davis County, looking at what we could potentially do to I-15 to make improvements. So that planning process has happened, and we're at today. Where we're at today is focusing on the very specific corridor of I-15, and we're talking about a purpose and need and scoping. So purpose and need basically means what's wrong and what should happen, what needs to be fixed. So what's broken and what's going to be fixed. Once we get that done, and that's what we're here to talk about tonight, is the purpose and need and how we go forward, we're going to start looking at alternatives. What are the solutions to fix the problems out there on I-15? From there, we'll put that all together in a draft environmental document. It'll go out for public review again. And then we will finalize that and then start, if a build alternative is selected, we'll start design and construction. This document is supposed to be done the very first part of 2024, and if all goes well, you could potentially see cones out on I-15 early 26. So it's still a few years away, but And there's a lot of work to do between now and then. We need to figure out what we're going to do, and someone has to make a decision on what are we going to do going forward. So what do you know so far? We've had a chance over the last few months to sit down with cities across the county and talk about what's broken. And they basically come into five different categories. The first one is aging infrastructure. If you've driven I-15 any time in the last several years, you'll notice there's a few potholes at times. The pavement's in rough shape in places. The bridges are in disrepair in some cases. There are 35 bridges throughout the corridor. Nine of them need to be fully replaced fairly soon. 12 of them need some sort of rehabilitation. And then all 35 could definitely use some widening. So aging infrastructure is a driver of this project. And then the last one in this category is drainage. Anytime it rains, you see standing water on I-15. It's a 50-year-old facility. Drainage gets clogged, it gets tough to drain away. So we want to try to fix that as well. The second thing is congestion or travel time. So you can see on the left, that is what's happening today. Well, in fact, 2019 are the travel times. Still good? Okay. Just my ears. Southbound from 4 South, from 89 down to 4 South, it takes about 18 minutes in the peak period. In the other direction, it takes about 19 minutes. You fast forward to 2050, and those times triple. It's 55 minutes in one direction and about 60-something minutes in the northbound direction. And that's assuming that every other plan project in the long-range plan is implemented. So front runners double-track for the entire length. There's a BRT system through here somewhere. Legacy has an extra lane. All of those are in place, and you still end up triple of the travel time on I-15 if you do nothing. So clearly there's a need to do something to improve traffic on I-15. The third need is at each of the interchanges, we're starting to experience backing onto I-15. That creates a safety problem, congestion problem, and we want to find solutions to those as well. The fourth thing is safety. The graphic on the right is a bubble chart of all the crashes on I-15 from 2018 to 2020. So just in 2 years, that's how many crashes you experience on the corridor. Especially through this section, the inside shoulder is very narrow. It's a foot to 2 feet in some cases. On the south end of the project, there's some S-curves that are hard to navigate for some folks, for a lot of people. You can see the bullets on the south end. So if there was a build alternative selective, this would be something we want to fix. And then finally, which these aren't in priority order because this is one of the top things that we want to try to address with this project, is limited connections, both east-west and north-south, from a pedestrian or bicycle perspective, not from a car perspective. We want to make I-15 part of the community and not a barrier to the community. We want to be able to get people across it and through it, east-west specifically. We went out and had a chance to walk the corridor with elected officials, some planning commission members, some public at each one of the interchanges, and we ran into several issues. If you had a chance to walk across I-15 at interchange, you will understand there's a fair amount of issues trying to get through that. The third picture from the right is a makeshift sidewalk that someone has made from, I think it's 4th South over to the commuter rail stop. So we want to try to fix those things so you don't have to walk on plywood to get to the commuter rail. Then again, east-west, we're just trying to make I-15 more permeable and get people through it. Like I said, we have been meeting over the last 4 or 5 months with stakeholders, trying to get an understanding of where we're at, what's broken, what needs to be fixed, and that's where we're at today. From here, Katie's going to take over and talk about opportunities for input.
Hello, thank you for having us.
If you could just state your name in the microphone for our minute secretary. Thanks.
My name's Katie Williams, and I'm with Horrox Engineers. We are doing the public involvement on this project and working with a larger public engagement team on this. So as Shane kind of went through the technical stuff and mentioned that we are in the middle of a public comment period that started on April 11th and runs through May 13th. There's some main categories that we're looking for feedback on, and these are actually, it's a really critical time to get public feedback, because these are kind of the metrics by which we'll shape the study and the outcomes. So we're looking to receive feedback on the draft purpose and needs statement, our draft screening criteria, and just any general ideas on how we can improve travel through the corridor. So this is our draft purpose and needs statement. It is qualified around UDOT's quality of life matrix, and we need a formal purpose and needs statement so we have certain measures by which to gauge any improvements and capture the needs that we're trying to address through this study. So I'll read through these, the purpose and needs statement, and jot down any questions you have, and we can get to them at the end. But our draft purpose is to improve safety, replace aging infrastructure, provide better mobility for all travel modes, strengthen the state and local economy, and better connect communities along I-15 from Farmington to Salt Lake City. The project purpose consists of the following items, which are organized by UDOT's quality of life framework categories of good health, connected communities, strong economy, and better mobility. So underneath the each one of these statements is a corresponding kind of measurable for the quality of life measures. So good health and connected communities, we look to improve safety and operations of I-15 main line, I-15 interchanges, bicyclist and pedestrian crossings, and the supporting roadway network. We want to be consistent with planned land use, growth objectives, and transportation plans, and that includes what you're doing here in your community and what you have planned, and enhance access and connectivity to Front Runner, connection to transit, regional trails, and across I-15. Under strong economy and better mobility, we look to replace aging infrastructure on I-15, enhance the economy by reducing travel delay, improve mobility and operations on I-15 mainline, I-15 interchanges, the supporting roadway network, transit connections, and bicyclist and pedestrian facilities to help accommodate projected 2050 travel demand. So that is our draft purpose and needs statement, which we're looking for feedback on. Are those the correct goals? Are we missing something? Is there something else that needs to be considered in this study? And then we'll look at our screening criteria. We need to know how we'll measure these potential alternatives. So what are the metrics that will determine if an alternative moves forward to further evaluation and study? This screening criteria graphic is kind of a funnel. And so we start with a whole variety of options, and then we put them through the screening criteria metrics, and we'll, as they don't meet our purpose and need or our goals for the study, we'll screen them out, and we'll eventually narrow down to a preferred alternative. Some screening criteria questions could be, and some of these draft metrics could be, do the alternatives presented meet UDOT safety standards like curvatures and shoulder widths and access and sight distance? Can the alternative be designed to reduce conflicts between motorized and non-motorized modes of transportation? Or does the alternative improve connections to transit or improve bicycle and pedestrian traffic at cross streets? So that's the second thing that we're looking for feedback on. And as you can see, it's really important to have some public buy-in and feedback on these, because these will shape what we do moving forward from here. So there are several different ways that you can submit a comment. Our comment period runs through May 13th. The easiest way is to visit our website. There's an interactive comment map that you can drop a pin and write your comment in there, and those are geographically tied. Also, we have a project email that you can send comments to, as well as they can be mailed in using good old snail mail. Any special accommodations, we are happy to meet. Just reach out to our project hotline that's listed there. When I met with your city council last week, I believe, they had talked about submitting some, you know, comments based on feedback as a city council, but know that you're also welcome to add feedback as an individual too. If you drive every day from Farmington to Salt Lake and you say, oh, that S-curve, it always is slowing down this time of day, leave those comments because those are just as important. So again, just start, this is our schedule. So once we finish up with this comment period and our purpose and need and scoping phase, we'll move into alternatives development. Alternative development is looking like it will come in the fall of this year. And this is not the only opportunity for the public to give feedback on the study and provide input. We will be back during other milestones in the study to receive and welcome feedback. This is just one of our first official public comment period. So here is kind of all of our official communication channels. We do have a Facebook group, and it's a really good way to keep up with where we're at in the study and what's going to be coming down the pipeline. So encourage you all to join. You're also welcome to share from that group to your own available channels. So that wraps up our presentation for today. Thank you for your time, and thank you for being a great partner to us, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you both. Does the commission have any questions for either of the presenters today?
Thank you for your time and for your briefings. Very informative. I look forward to seeing more about it. Question in terms of outside of the scoping process and the comment, do you actually collect input from like the Wasatch Front Regional Council? I'm thinking in particular there was a workshop, this isn't just a matter of the last few months, and it was about all modes of transportation, but it did talk about like out of North Salt Lake, you know, desired access in and out of the city, on ramps and so forth. There was even talk like over here in Hatch Park about something going north or something going south. But anyway, do you actually do that, or does all that have to come through the scoping process, through the comments?
No, we've sat down with the NPO and talked about what's in the long-range plan, what solution.
If you could talk in the microphone, sorry, we have some people online too.
No problem. We sat down with WFRC and walked through what their plans are, what they've heard from the communities, want to make sure that that's incorporated as we move forward. Yeah. They're one of our biggest stakeholders.
That's great. I think, you know, obviously there was a lot of integration with considerations of what our local land use plans are in terms of how that parlays into transportation. So yeah. I think that's great. And then just as a matter of understanding, is the speed limits, is that a variable that's considered as an alternative, or is that set by legislative mandate?
That's a very good question. It's not an alternative that we have put on the table yet. It's not legislative mandated. The top limit is, but not the bottom limit. So we could be changed. Typically, that's set by a traffic engineering analysis and set at the 85 percentile. But it is something that we could potentially look at. If you want to make that comment, absolutely take it and plug it into the mix.
Thank you.
You bet.
And some of the challenges and the things that we've identified in this study are, you know, with the sharp curves, we're seeing a lot of uptick in, you know, accidents and things there because of the increased speed. Is that right?
Yeah. The curves were built for a, you know, 55, 65 mile an hour speed limit. And then when you narrow the shoulders, you reduce that sight distance. So at the very least, it'll be straightened out to accommodate the increased speed, the new speed.
I'm going to ask another question.
Good. No civil engineering questions, so just keep it on the side.
Anyway, I am curious. Pavement types, is it just universally accepted that all new freeways are concrete? And if so, is there a difference in the noise characteristics of that versus other alternatives like asphalt?
So the department has a standing policy that all urban freeways are concrete. The concrete that they pour now, it's it's called tiny. They put grooves in it in a certain way. That 20 years ago, they did it longitudinally or transversely, so across the road, and they made a ton of noise. And now they do it longitudinally, and it's cut down the noise significantly. So there is still a difference between that and asphalt. But the benefits of the noise on asphalt wears out over time because it becomes more porous and rough and more noisy. So by and large, they're about the same year 3 and 4. So.
Thank you.
Yep.
In our city, we are honored to have an entire quarter of an interchange in North Salt Lake City with Center Street. So our biggest concern is east-west mobility through that interchange. It's not UDOT that controls that, it's UP and UTA. So what's your coordination like as far as overall mobility with transit authorities?
That is one of the biggest, what's the right word? Challenges along the entire corridor are those railroad tracks. We can make I-15 porous as all get out, but as soon as you get across it, you run into the railroad. So they're a partner with us. We've sat down with them on many occasions and walked through what we're doing here and what makes sense for them. We're not going to be able to get great separation on every one of those cross streets. So we're going to be focusing on the major ones, like 2600 North. Which is 11th South?
26 South, 11th North.
Same in Utah County. I should be familiar with that, but I don't. We have talked with North Salt Lake about a new interchange at north of here, sort of that I-215, Beck Street, I-15. How do we accommodate more local access there? So I think there'll be more access. There won't be less access when we're done. There'll be more. But an intersection like Center is really difficult. I mean, I've been shocked of the number of unique interchanges in Davis County. There's not one that's the same the entire route, I don't think. There's not a standard four-legged interchange except at Parrish. So trying to get a one-access, one-legged interchange through FHWA today is going to be a challenge. If an access is reduced there, it's going to be improved somewhere else. But overall, I think access will be improved.
How is the comment period being publicized?
So we've been traveling around to our partnering cities and doing these presentations. We've also been using kind of the available communication channels from all of our stakeholders, so the cities, schools, different municipality organizations within the municipalities, and then obviously through the UDOT's official channels. So that's how we've been getting the word out about it.
We have signs posted.
Great.
Yard signs.
Thanks.
Yep.
Any other comments or questions?
We'll be back, so if you have them.
We'll just let them fester.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both for your presentation. We appreciate you being here tonight and your work to improve the transportation. Okay, we will move on to agenda item 4, work session, town center form base code.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me okay there?
There's Allie. Yes, we can hear you, Allie.
Okay. So as promised, we're going to start... We're going to finish up section 1, which last time we said we were going to tear it apart and bring it back to you. So we've got that. And then we're going to do sections 3 and 4. And then next week we'll try to tackle the big one, which is section 5. And that's the building type section. So as far as the introduction section that you saw last time you met, we did take out parts of it and changed some parts of it. So I put some bullet points up here of the meat of what is in this section. It's not a very long one. There's an adjacency requirement, which basically says that if you want to be in this town center zone, which is shown on the screen, you have to be adjacent to the zone. Or if you want to zone out of it, you have to be adjacent to a neighboring zone that's different than the town center zone. So we don't want to create an island in the middle of the town center zone that's not town center. We don't want to create pockets here and there. So there's an adjacency requirement. The sub-districts that are within this town center zone, which we'll talk about in the next section, will go through the same process of rezoning as any rezone. So basically, we won't be creating one big town center zone. It will be several smaller town center zones, but there's this big overlying, is that the word I'm looking for? Area that can be a town center zone. Then it goes on to talk about what developments this is applicable to. So of course, once we pass this code, everything from then on is applicable to the code if it's zoned that. So we plan to rezone everything after the code is passed. And so once they're in that zone, this code applies. Developments that are rezoned that are already in process can still continue as they were approved, as long as work has begun within 1 year of the code passing and construction continues diligently. Work that was approved under a development agreement will still be able to continue under that development agreement. And the development agreement would prevail if there's any conflict between this code and the development agreement. If it's not stated in the development agreement, then this code will apply. And then as far as there's going to be dozens of buildings that are made non-conforming by this because we're trying to spur redevelopment. And so if people are wanting to make changes to their buildings that are existing in the town center, there are some triggers that will cause them to have to come completely into compliance, but they can make some changes without having to comply with the full form-based code. So as far as street facade revisions, if they are within the build-to area, which is defined later as the minimum and maximum, we have minimum and maximum setbacks. And so the build-to area is between those minimum and maximum setback areas. So if they're within the build-to area, and they're adding doors, changing the location of doors, causing a change greater than 30% in the windows or 30% of the facade, then they don't get to maintain that non-conforming status. As far as roof revisions, if they're within that build-to area and the shape or the style changes with no added square footage, they can do that without having to come into full compliance. And then site characteristics, they can make changes to the site if it isn't over 10% of the site. So like if they were redoing all their landscaping and parking and everything like that, and it was greater than 10%, then they wouldn't get that non-conforming status and they would have to comply with the code. A change in use regarding the number of units, the gross floor area, or if their capacity increases by 50% or more, then they don't maintain their status. And multi-tenant signs are exempt. So if you have like cabinets for signs like Nacho House across the street from City Hall, and Neighbors Market and all of those businesses, they have like cabinets for the signs. So we can change out those signs for the multi-tenant building without having to come into compliance with the code. And then if their ground, let's see, their gross floor area, sorry, is increased by 50% or more, or they abandon the use for 12 months or more, then they have to come into compliance. We can go to the next slide if nobody has any questions about that. Okay, go ahead to the next slide. Some general requirements listed in section one is to have an interconnected street pattern. These are kind of lofty goals for the town center. But we hope to have, if there were any new streets proposed, we hope to have more of a grid type system in the town center. So if someone was going to put in private streets, even we would want to make sure that we're not dead ending the streets, and that we're making sure we have through streets and they're all connected. Sorry. Sorry if it's really loud on my end. I am in a basement apartment and everybody's stomping on the floor upstairs. okay. And then as far as access goes, this is talking about driveway access. We're discouraging the primary access on Center Street or Highway 89. And then we're requiring pedestrian and bicycle corridors on blocks that are over 500 feet in size. We want to combine those where possible with mid-block crossings. So you'd have a trail that comes out onto Highway 89, and then we would want a pedestrian signal on Highway 89. Or on Center Street, you want to line up your pedestrian and bicycle corridors with that mid-block crossing. We want to locate those active transportation corridors in the middle third of the block where possible, so that we aren't having them too close to the sidewalk. We want to have a break in the middle of the block. We want a 20-foot minimum on the right-of-way width for any trails. And that calculation can apply towards their open space calculations that would be required. As far as lots, we want to have blocks that are fronted with lots on at least two faces. We want to have frontage on a street for all lots. We want to try to have rectangular lots where possible. And the next one is talking about through lots, which I think in our city code right now are defined as double frontage lots. And they would not be, that means that you have a street on each side of the lot. So they would not be permitted unless they're covering 50% or more of a block, and both of the streets would be treated as front property lines. Flag lots would be prohibited. And then there's a definition section. And the reason why we have a definition section here is that these terms are not used anywhere else in the city code. And so they're specific to this chapter 25. And if they are conflicting with any of the definitions in the rest of the code, then these definitions would prevail for this chapter. I think, what's the next slide? Is that the last one for the introduction? Yes. Okay. So does anybody have any questions about section one?
Hi, Allie. This is Commissioner Jorgensen, Ron Jorgensen. So back on the prior slide, one thing I was curious about, what on the diagram, there's a graphic that says street entrance or street frontage slash entrance type, and then there's like an arrow going there. I'm not 100% sure what that's trying to show us. Can you clarify for me?
Yeah.
I'm the only one who doesn't get it, but.
You will get it when we get to chapter five. So that's your cliffhanger for chapter five. But the reason why I put that graphic in there is because one of the defined terms is the vertical and horizontal divisions. And so I think this was taken, Sherry, correct me if I'm wrong, is this taken from another area of our code?
You're gonna have to repeat the question.
This graphic on the screen, did you take that?
No, I stole this graphic from Clearfield's form-based code.
Okay. So it's trying to show these vertical and horizontal divisions, which are defined in the definition section of the introduction. Does that answer your question? The street frontage and entrance type issue will be, that will come in later. So the definition section is for the entire chapter, all the sections. So some of the terms you may not understand until you actually work with them in another section, if that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you. Fair enough.
Okay. Any other questions for the introduction? Okay, let's move on to sub-districts. We made this one really small. Basically, it's just describing the different zones within the larger town center area. So what we failed to do is provide a description for each of these zones, which I think we do need to do. So that we understand kind of the goal of that zone and what it's supposed to look like. So the core zone is supposed to be where we have the most density, the tallest buildings. It's supposed to be a connection to the new enhanced bus route that will be on Highway 89. And it's supposed to be kind of the center of activity for the town center. The Arts and Parks District is the green one, and that is Hatch Park and the surrounding areas. It includes the old Bamberger train station buildings that are historic buildings, and there's a bunch of artists that live over there. I don't know if you guys are aware of that, but they've talked about maybe building like an artist studio in that area and opening that up to the public. And so it's kind of a combination of this park and like the historic buildings that give it a little bit of a unique character. The Center and Orchard District, which is the orange one. It's bounded by Center Street and Orchard. And it would be kind of a transition area to the surrounding neighborhoods. So it's a transition from this more intense core to the neighborhoods east of Orchard Drive. And it would have some mixed use development, maybe some like restaurants with seating out in the pedestrian area. The Boulevard District is the red one. And it's distant from the neighborhood, so we can have more height in this area. And it's also the southern entrance to the city. And so all of these districts have kind of their own character and need to look a little different than the others. So this one doesn't have to transition to the residential as much. But it does allow for higher buildings in this area because of the slope of the hill. Then the North 89 is the light blue one. This is another one that they're kind of the bookends of the entrances to the town center. And this one would be near, I think we took out the enhanced bus station at 350 North. So this one might not be near that, an enhanced bus. I keep wanting to say bus rapid transit, but it's not that anymore. So this one would be another one of those transition districts because the edge districts serve as a little bit of a transition, but right now they're inherently residential. So the North 89 district is the buildings start to step down a little bit more from as the further you get away from the core and the closer you get to those surrounding residential areas. And then also the edge district is to complete that transition into the surrounding neighborhoods. We're concerned about having buildings that are too high next to existing single family dwellings. And so in those edge districts, it just provides that smoother transition on the height. That's really what's the goal we're trying to achieve there, to make sure that it's not a giant four-story building next to a single family home. So that's basically the sub-district. So we plan to put in some short descriptions. But other than that, we didn't have any other changes to this sub-district section. Do you have any questions about these?
I've been telling other commissioners, so I might as well tell you, Allie. This just probably speaks to my nerdiness, but taking out the master plan language in favor of the code language is so much better for me. It's very readable. It's very enforceable. I like it very, very much.
Good. It's shorter, too. That's the bonus.
This is Commissioner Moss. I have a couple questions, too, but also second to that, like, this is a great direction. Super awesome work. A few questions on the sub-district. So are parcels able to ask to be moved from one sub-district to another as if they were changing, like, a zone?
Yes. It'd be the same process as a rezoning. So these sub-districts are actual zones. So when you look on our zoning map, there will be a bunch of small zones within the town center. And so if they wanted to move from one zone to the next, we do have that adjacency requirement. So they would have to be adjacent to, so say someone wants to move from center and orchard into the core, they would have to be adjacent to the core. They couldn't move, they couldn't put a little island of core in the middle of center and orchard.
Okay, perfect. That's super helpful. And then, so if someone wanted to petition to be in the town center zone, or like, yeah, come into the town center zone that's not right now, they would have to change the zone also to correspond with one of these sub-districts.
Yes, same okay. process and same adjacency requirement.
Thank you.
Commissioner Holbrook, could you elaborate a little bit more about what's the difference between the Edge sub-district and Center and Orchard?
So the Edge differ? Sub-district still, as I envision it, like the most density you'd see in an Edge sub-district is like a fourplex. But the Center and Orchard zone it's more commercial. We've got the school there. We've got some maybe higher apartment buildings, townhouses, things like that. And in that little triangular piece, we hope to get like some restaurants or businesses like that. And they will be, I think, 3 stories is the maximum in Center and Orchard, which is higher than what is allowed in the Edge District. The Edge District is meant to be a buffer from those height restrictions, or height allowances, I should say.
Okay. So I'm sorry if I were to play devil's advocate. Is there a difference between Center and Orchard and Core at that point?
Yes. Yeah, the Core, I think, allows 5 stories. And there, when we get into the building type section, I think that's when you'll really see the differences in these sub-districts. It's kind of hard to isolate these sections and go through them without reading the rest of them. But the building types, it talks about what height is allowed in what sub-district and what types of buildings are allowed. So as you keep going, as we keep going and reviewing this, the core allows a whole different set of building types than say the Arts and Parks District or the Edge District or Center and Orchard.
Okay, understood.
That makes sense. I'm sorry if I'm being confusing. Yeah. It's like the core is like really intense and dense and tall, and Center and Orchard is just a step down from that, and then the Edge is a further step down.
Understood.
So we get to the what was that?
Thank you. That better explanation.
So Allie, again, I join the other commissioners in compliments on this work product. This is excellent. So for the folks that are currently in single family residences in the Edge District, what do you see as the advantages or disadvantages of being in that sub-district and being within the town center? I guess what I'm trying to get at is, what do we think the reaction will be?
For the people who are currently in the Edge District or outside the Edge District?
In the Edge District, but impacted by something new and different, something that may be hard to comprehend. And what would be the arguments in favor of somebody who's an existing single-family dwelling homeowner, why you should like it, or maybe why they would not like it? And I think, obviously, if you're looking at multifamily, that could be a trigger point for someone, and some of the other things that are allowed under the adjacent town center zones. I mean, I understand that. But anyway, if you give any thought to how that lands with some of the people that currently own those homes?
Yeah. I think a lot of the Edge District is not single family homes. I think a lot of the Edge District is duplexes, fourplexes. There's Chesham Village, which is, they're like townhomes, attached townhomes. And so I think there's really only maybe one street we're talking about here that actually is primarily single family. So I hope that people see it as an opportunity to increase their property values. And I hope that people don't get intimidated by the density within the town center. That's why we wanted to maintain this edge buffer, because if we did not put the edge buffer in, then someone could buy up two single family homes and build a super tall building and rezone it into North 89. But with the Edge District, that provides that buffer so that they could only rezone into the Edge. And that protects all those neighboring property owners.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Do we have any more questions for the sub-district section? Okay. Moving forward. So section 4 is about uses. And this is where you probably will have a lot of questions. So just some general requirements are that a lot may contain more than one use. Each of those uses can function as either a principal use or an accessory use on the lot, unless it's otherwise specified. Each use shall be located within a permitted building type, which we'll talk about building types next time, unless otherwise specified. Each use can have both indoor and outdoor facilities unless otherwise specified. And the uses may be further limited by the building type. For example, there's like a building type called a storefront building that's allowed in the core. And a storefront building can't have residential on the ground floor. You have to have commercial on the ground floor and then residential up top in the upper floors. So that's what it means by the use might be further limited. There are some footnotes to this table. So footnote number 1 is saying that it's permitted in upper stories only, fronting US 89 and Center Street. And then footnote number 2 is referencing the home occupation section of the city code. So I don't know if you all have had time to look over this table. I'm prepared to move on and give more description about what each of these uses are and what might be nested under these general categories, if you want me to move forward that way, or if you have some questions now. I'm not sure how you want to handle that.
Allie, I have one question. It is in the Boulevard accessory uses drive-through retail. Mm-hmm. The stop has a drive-through, so it says it's not permitted. Mm-hmm. So is that drive-through going to be eliminated, or?
No, that is regulated by development agreement.
Okay.
And so it is allowed in their development
agreement.
It's
not permitted in the Boulevard, the drive-through retail, but then we're maintaining that through the agreement that is existing.
Yes.
Okay, great.
So that was essentially we wouldn't have any new drive-throughs in the town center.
What about the Beans and Brews in the new building?
They're governed by the development agreement as well.
Okay.
So that's going to trump the town center zone because we have a legally binding agreement with those property owners. Now, if they decided not to build the Beans and Brews or later convert it to some other use, that would change the game there.
So if we have a handful of questions on this table and we just want to explore these in a little more detail, what's the most efficient way? Do you want to do that now as open discussion, or do you want to just see the comments? I mean, for instance, is within the core, we say permitted hospital and clinic, but you know, given the size of that, I'm not sure that a hospital couldn't even fit there. So does that even make sense? In fact, a lot of these districts are relatively small. It'd have to be a pretty small hospital. But anyway, that's an example of you know, one of the things that I would like to just talk about, think about a little bit more. And then there's some that are consistencies between, retail space and like parking structures, things like that.
I would suggest that we move forward and go into a little more detail and then come back to this table and discuss each use individually, because I do go into some more detail about what might fall under some of these categories and also what uses are prohibited.
Thank you.
Do you think that would be beneficial to move forward and then come back?
Whatever is most efficient, whatever you want, whatever you think's best.
Okay. I'll try to fly through this and then we can come back and hopefully I will have answered some of your questions. So the residential and lodging uses include multifamily residential, which would require that it be attached, stacked. So like apartments must have 5 or more units. So this would disallow fourplexes. Horizontally attached, like townhomes, must have 3 or more units, except in the edge subdistrict, where you could have duplexes. And then single family residential is just defined as one unit, not mixed or attached to any other unit, hotels and inns, and residential care facilities. Civic uses are assembly, public services, educational facilities, and hospitals. Utility and infrastructure would be like electric and gas distribution, sewage treatment, water treatment and storage, energy conversion. We have right in the town center, we have like a Rocky Mountain Power substation behind Neighbors Market or Quest Dominion. I don't know who it is, but we have a utility building there. So that's the definition of that. Can you move to the next slide? Retail and service uses are broken into a couple of categories. Neighborhood retail and service is less than 8,000 square feet in size, and then general retail and service is greater than 8,000 square feet. Outdoor sales lots would not be permitted. So you can see the list there of everything that would be included in the neighborhood retail and services and everything in the general retail and services. And it's not an exhaustive list. We don't mean for it to be. We want to be a little bit more general, unless we have a specific problem with a business and then we're very specific about it. Okay, go to the next slide. Office uses assume that there's going to be appointments or meeting times, that they have regular hours when people are going to be there at the office. And sale of goods would be permitted as an accessory use in those. And there's the list of some examples of office uses that would be allowed. Craft industry. This one's an interesting one. So this is small scale manufacturing, production, assembly, and or repair. It would create little to no noxious byproducts. It would include a showroom or a small retail outlet. It may include an office or a small warehouse with limited distribution as an accessory use, and the maximum gross floor area would be 10,000 square feet. So this would be like somebody who does woodwork and they sell their woodwork, or they do pottery and they sell their pottery. So they have like a warehouse or a studio type of thing to do their craft, and then they have a showroom for it. So that's kind of the goal for that. We're not looking for like big industrial manufacturing in there, but we want to allow for some craft industry. Go ahead to the next one. Open space. And this is where you have to keep the distinction in your mind of open space as a use, but not as like later in the code, we have open space types. And so that's where we regulate like what it's going to look like and where it can be located and all those things. So this is just open space as a general use, in which case parking lots would not be permitted as open space. Stormwater accommodations would be required. Some structures would be allowed in their open space, like a concession stand that's under 200 square feet, like a mobile concession stand or something like that. Civic facilities would be excluded from the size restriction. So that wouldn't cause any problems with the Hatch Park redesign. And then any buildings that are adjacent to or within the open space would have their facades facing into the open space. So if a development has open space in the middle of their development, all the buildings that face into it have to be treated as if it was like a street facade. Accessory uses would be a home occupation, parking lots, parking structures, and there's some regulations there about how they would have to design their parking lots. Outdoor display of goods. So permanent outdoor storage of goods that typically aren't stored indoors would not be permitted. And it would have to be pertinent to the use in front of which it is located. Drive-through facilities would only be permitted in the North 89 subdistrict. And any drive-through facility would have to have the drive-through like canopy or structure in the back of the building. So then prohibited uses. If you think of anything that needs to be included or shouldn't be included on this list, let us know. But these were some, we don't want a car lot like that picture in the middle of the town center. But so these were some things that we thought would not be conducive to a pedestrian friendly environment in the town center, and wouldn't cause people to come and gather in the town center. And you guys should all have a copy of this, right? So I think at this point, we can probably go back to that table and hit me with all your questions.
Okay, so the core, the question of the hospital, does it seem scale appropriate to contemplate a hospital in the core district?
I think that would probably be more like a, let's see, that's listed under the civic one. Yeah, hospital and clinic.
We could always change that to medical clinics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would make sense. I mean, if it was a smaller clinic, it's a scale question for me.
It may be able to just be removed because in the neighborhood retail and services section, it has emergency care clinic. We could just list medical clinic there and then remove it from the civic one altogether.
Okay, and then just moving on the use titles. There's a couple different terms used for that craftsman industrial, and then there's craft industry. I personally favor the craft industry term. I think that'd be consistent. Does that make sense?
Missed that. It was previously craftsman industrial, and then we changed it to craft industry, and we probably just missed one here or there.
Okay, and then if you look at the outdoor display of goods, it's permitted in like the boulevard, not permitted in all the other sub-districts. I'm not sure I understand that. I think about each one of those, like, you know, Center and Orchard, there's some stores there. Why would we disallow them being able to display outdoor goods? You know, I can see not wanting to have it, you know, right up, occupying a portion of the parking lot or whatever up against the street and all that. But as I look across those three, allowed on the Boulevard, but not allowed on North 89, not allowed in Center and Orchard, I'm struggling with consistency on that. So those three, I think we ought to just think about, and don't have to answer that now, but that's just a comment. And then under North 89, we allow large retail, that's permitted use, but we don't allow parking structure there. It would seem to me like if somebody was to build large retail, that might be actually advantageous to have a parking structure rather than a parking lot, because it would occupy a smaller footprint. It would allow more space for other stuff. So again, I wonder whether the parking structure ought to be potentially allowed, permitted within that North 89.
I wonder if it might be beneficial to put like a, let me look at the prohibited uses. I wonder if it might be beneficial to put a maximum size in the retail, because I don't envision the big box store coming into the town center. And maybe I'm off base here, but.
Yeah, I think your point's a good one, because again, all of these sub-districts are relatively small, and any large box store would totally overwhelm any one of them.
Yeah, and I think this is referring to, yeah.
Meaning on retail and service under general, having a max square footage on there as well, is what you're saying, Commissioner?
Well, that was Allie's suggestion, and I think it's a good one. You know, I don't know right off the top of my head what that would be. What 8,000 is 80 by 100, that's pretty big already. But I don't know how much bigger would be okay. But anyway, that's something that could be figured out reasonably easy. But I do think that's a good notion. Because, again, I think it would be too easy to just occupy, you know, two-thirds of one of these sub-districts with one retail development that was large.
Unless Trader Joe's, then we should allow it.
Exactly. And if it we should just list Trader Joe's specifically.
If we're listing favorites, I want Raw Bean Coffee Shop.
As far as the parking structure, I think it's not allowed in North 89 because of the height. And there's an issue there where on the west side of the road in North 89, it drops off, so it's up at a higher level. 89 is at a higher level than the neighborhood behind it. And so we're trying to lower the height a little bit on North 89 and in the Edge District around it. And so I'm trying to recall years of going through this code, but I'm thinking that's probably why a parking structure was not allowed in the North 89.
Yeah. And again, if we're going to limit the size of the retail establishments that would go in there, I think that would probably preclude the need for, you know, multi-story parking, whatever. But
does that prohibit underground parking, though?
I would not want it to. So we might need to write this in a different way.
I don't think it does, because when it's talking about a parking structure, it's talking about a sole structure by itself without any. And when you have parking in the building, so you have podium parking, it's actually part of the building. So I when it's defined as a parking structure, and maybe that's what we need to do, is
well,
add
I'm,
a definition
I'm
of
talking
a parking
about
structure.
Is where it's listed under accessory use, though. So
yeah, so if it's, oh, you mean like,
yeah, no,
it's listed as an accessory use?
Yeah, I'm actually questioning under accessory use parking structures, the no for North 89, where you allow large retail. That's the consistency I'm pointing to.
So it does say later in the code, parking structures within the buildings are regulated per building type. So that would be the underground parking would be regulated by the building type, not by this accessory use. So I think Sherry's right in saying that this is saying a freestanding parking structure that's an accessory to the use of the building.
Okay.
We might want to define that somehow, because I mean, because you could have like a City Creek situation where you have a parking structure shared by multiple buildings.
Mm-hmm.
We'd want that.
Yeah, and we do allow for it in all the zones except for North 89 and Edge. I think North 89 is also pretty far away from the center of activity. If you wanted a parking structure, you'd probably want it closer to the core.
For sure.
We'll try to make that more clear.
I'm hoping I'm not stealing Commissioner Larson's thunder, but the last one, I'm just being dumb, I guess. I don't understand why we are discouraging the drive-through retail. What's the thought there?
In the town center as a whole, we're trying to make it harder to drive your cars through it, right? And we want people to stay and walk, and we don't want people driving through and leaving. So it's not really conducive to a pedestrian environment to have drive-through.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, the whole point of the form-based code and of our master plan for the town center is that it will be a walkable. And so we're trying to get away from those automobile-centric uses like gas stations and car washes and McDonald's and
we've made some mistakes.
Those types of uses. I don't want to have a McDonald's in our town center. That would be weird.
The boulevard? Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
If you think of like Bountiful's Main Street, you don't see drive-throughs in Bountiful's Main Street. You see big wide sidewalks. You see people walking to little boutique shops and things like that. And that's kind of the vibe. We don't want to be Bountiful, but like that's kind of the vibe of like a town center is a place that you hang out, not a place that you drive through.
So a quick quack right in the middle of
quick quack in the middle.
The boulevard there.
You can walk through.
Which I wonder if just the edge. The change would be allowing drive-through in the edge, or not the edge, in the, and now I'm confused with what it is. The boulevard.
Yeah, that's
is that going to be walkable along the, you know, when 89 comes into town and where the Beans and Brews is going to be?
Right, because I don't think you're coming into the core here and then going to walk all the way to the boulevard. Like that, I don't think, the boulevard also has a very driving vibe because it's the interchange too, but this is also can be very long range, and maybe in years and years and years that could shift if the businesses become more pedestrian centric.
There's also going to be an enhanced bus station right there.
Yeah.
So people will be walking from the bus station. It'd be nice if there was something for them to walk to.
Yeah.
And we also have been talking about closing off, this is opening up another can of worms, but potentially closing off Main Street at Highway 89. And that would open that up for some plaza space right there, right adjacent to the Boulevard District.
Yeah, that street seems a little redundant.
And we'd have a pedestrian crossing on 89 right there too.
Just touching on that, Commissioner Holbrook, sorry. The triangle piece between City Hall and where Main Street and Highway 89 meet, is that public land? Is that privately owned?
Yes.
I've always wondered.
Yes, it's currently owned by the city. And it would be if we do close off Main Street at 89 at that location, that space would be converted to some type of active plazas, pedestrian space.
Sorry, I didn't realize my mic was on.
She's threatening me.
I don't want her to put the camera on me. What I wanted to tell you is that we just recently acquired that. Was it a year and a half ago? I think maybe when COVID about started, we purchased that property from Mr. Hendrickson. So for years, somebody's tried to put different uses on there and they think it's bigger than it is. And then as we talk to them, we're like, no. But we really think that it would be a great entry monument to do something really special there. And also that intersection where Main Street comes onto Highway 89 is extremely dangerous. Nobody's head turns that far naturally to check for cars. So we're doing the whole town center traffic study for, to see what would happen if we did close that section of the street. How would that impact Center and Main and Highway 89 and the town center in general? So that's something that we're exploring, and we'll be coming to they'll be coming to make a presentation to the Planning Commission, hopefully at your first meeting in May, but possibly the second meeting if they don't quite get things done this week. So just so you have an update on that. We have lots of irons in the fires.
And then, I'm sorry, Commissioner Holbrook again, newbie on the panel, so I don't understand. I see under Civic, there's a spot for Library, Museum, Post Office. Is there something that we can incorporate? Maybe it's not in this section, but to encourage collaboration between the Postal Service and a developer to include a post office in the main floor of a bigger development? I mean, there's no mail trucks. There's no, it's just a service center. Is there something that we could do to push that idea?
We can ask them as they come in. I mean, that's really all we can do, is we provide the uses available in there, and then as they come in and they're looking at what they want to put in the building, we could say, hey, it would be great. Because my dream or vision, I guess, would be to acquire that post office property right now and then relocate it. But one of the things that would be it that could make that work is if in our community center, in our park, if we put the post office there next to the new rec center when that goes in. So that's kind of, or bring it into the town center where people would come and get their mail, and that brings more people into the town center to activate the space and spend more time and money there. That's our hope.
But nothing to write into.
Yeah.
The.
I don't know how we could demand it. I mean, if somebody asks for it and we did a development agreement, if we were asking for something and they wanted something special, we could possibly negotiate that. But
I see.
Other than that.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if, this is Commissioner Jorgensen, I'm wondering if we can go to the tables. I've just got some questions and some comments on that. Would that be okay? Actually, specifically table 4.3, if we could go to that one. It lists retail and services general.
Keep going on the slideshow.
Not in the slideshow, but in the handouts. The first example that's listed is automotive supply, but I'm assuming that would be like an AutoZone, something that's a parts that's new. And then the reason I bring it up is if you go over to the prohibited uses, it's got auto-oriented uses, and then it's listing several examples. It doesn't list salvage yards, which in those prohibited uses, I'd certainly like to see a list of salvage yards, because we have businesses, you know, right now on like Highway 89 that they're parting out, they're right there in our district and they're parting out businesses and things like that. I don't know if that's but anyway, I think salvage yards needs to be listed there, but I don't think that's what we want.
It is in the slideshow.
Mackenzie, someone, if you can just go forward, it's in the slideshow so we can see. Right there, 4.3.
Yeah, so the top one's the one I'm wondering about. Is that inconsistent with the very top item in the prohibited uses? Because, again, this automotive supply would be presumably new parts, like an AutoZone, whatever, NAPA. Maybe that's fine, but then we have a very broad definition of just about everything else in that that's automotive related. So I wonder if it ought to come out of 4.3. There's plenty of other places to put auto parts stores in town.
I agree.
We're going to have two on Redwood Road, so I have no objection to pulling that out.
And then I had some comments on prohibited uses too, but just to continue with some of the descriptions that go along with these tables, if I could, when we get over to discussion about utility and infrastructure, so obviously whatever's required for the city's needs is allowed, electric, gas, sewage, whatever. But I wonder if there should be exclusions. So for example, would we exclude new utility scale high voltage transmission lines that just come through the town? Would we exclude energy production facilities like utility scale solar panels or utility scale wind turbines and a lot of that? We've gotten into that discussion before, and I'm not talking about accessory uses where you have solar panels on your building or something like that, or on your parking structure. But anyway, that's a question. The utility and infrastructure allowance seemed very generous. And could you come in and argue, well, you never prohibited, bringing big steel structures and 340 volt lines through there, and you didn't say you couldn't put in a wind turbine, whatever. But anyway, that's a question.
I think that's a great comment, which I failed to notice. But someone could say, we're going to put a cell tower in the middle of the town center, right? And we don't want that. So we'll definitely note that.
What we would want to say on cellular service or those types of things is that they could have the building mounted wall cellular tower. There's more ways to do cellular than just on a big tower. You can do them on the sides of buildings or on the roof of a building without it being on a tower, and they're just panels that go on the side of the building. So I will look into that because I've seen that before, and we can make sure that's addressed if that's something that you would want. But I can show you examples before we put it in.
Yeah. I think that's great. And just in general, think about the utility scale type of things as opposed to the municipal oriented ones. So, high voltage transmission, big solar powers, a solar concentrator, a big wind turbine, something that's beyond the use of the city. Would you want it in your city core? Probably not.
And Commissioner Holberg, I brought it up last meeting about infrastructure and utilities and burying them. Maybe that would correlate to creating its own section related to utilities.
We could talk about underground. We could make underground utilities specifically required that. That's actually a good place to put that. That if they have an overhead power line on their frontage, that the requirement when they build or redevelop it's that they have to bury them. So I like that idea.
If we're good on that discussion, under the craft industry one, and this comes to that bullet manufacturing option, I think the Planning Commission actually approved it, but the City Council vetoed it. It was just up on the here on Highway 89. But anyway, we think about craft industry. I think no noxious byproducts is great. That's a great criteria, but I think there needs to be more than that. There should be no significant fire, explosion, hazardous chemical release type of risks either. You could argue that, we're just managing little nuclear explosion devices, and if everything goes well, we're not creating any noxious byproducts. But, maybe inherently hazardous, maybe fire explosions, explosive, hazardous chemical release and all that. So I think that craft industry ought to be tightened up around those three parameters.
I like it. So hazardous, explosive, and what was the third one you said?
Fire, explosion, and hazardous chemical release.
I like it. Commissioner Jorgensen always has the best notes to share.
I'm retired. So I get the most time, so I have no excuse. I have no excuse for not.
We always appreciate all of you, really, we do. I just happen to see his notes and I'm like, oh, I need those.
And then the last table I wanted to talk about was the one that's explicitly prohibited uses. And I think this, if I'm not mistaken, looks familiar, so I believe it came from the existing code. But anyway, I already mentioned salvage yards up at the top. I think we talked about auto supply. I didn't know, I'm probably really stupid here, but what's a non-store retailer? What is that?
That's like an Amazon or somebody that doesn't have any, they do retail, but there's no retail storefront. So their primary operation is mail order clientele.
Online sales. And then they're storing the stuff there and shipping it out.
Okay, gotcha. That makes sense.
And there are small entities that do that, not just Amazon. There are smaller ones that they probably have an Amazon account, but that don't ship directly from Amazon.
Under the item on RV parks and campgrounds and RV sales, does that include boats?
Yeah, recreational vehicles would entail all of those things. Boats, motorcycles, ATVs.
In a different part of the code in the text, it talked about no large-scale postal sorting and distribution, so I don't know if we need to bring that over to this table, but anyway, it's covered. We have the manufacturing large-scale, and again, I come back to that's a relative term. You know, manufacturing on a small scale could have hazardous materials and some of that. I just think we need to tighten that up around hazardous materials, manufacturing large-scale, or any use involving with hazardous materials. The pawn shops was good. What about thrift shops, surplus shops, rummage, things like that?
So we do have, do you want to prohibit them? We do have in the other, in some of the other sections, I think there's an antique store. What zone was that one in, Allie?
Probably the neighborhood retail, I would guess. Boutique or small format retail shops, antiques, art galleries, bike sales, clothing, games, hardware, hobby, toys.
And that'd be less than 8,000 square feet.
Be like a Plato's closet or something. But there wouldn't be like a Deseret Industries in the town center.
Okay, just a few others. And these are all questions. I'll have question marks by them. Trailer parks.
I think it'd be cool to have a little thrift shop. That's just my opinion.
What's your question about trailer parks?
Would we want those? Would that be a permitted use in, say the Edge District or not?
It would be not permitted by building type.
Right.
What about massage and tattoo parlors?
Those would be permitted under personal services. That's how we categorize them right now. So there are legitimate massage parlors. They don't all do things they shouldn't, unlike one of the last ones.
I'm being very careful to ask these questions.
Recently approved. Put that in the minutes.
And I just Googled model code on prohibited uses, and then I picked out a few here. So anyway, I'm asking them these questions. What about portable building sales, like, tough sheds and things like that?
That would be something that would be prohibited because it would require outdoor storage and display.
Okay. I've used up way more than my time.
You're great.
Keep going. We appreciate it. You're not bothering anybody here.
Open it up.
Yeah.
Nah, that's all.
This is brainstorming at its finest because the ideas that you have help spur our thoughts. We can't do this in a vacuum. I mean, it's just the three of us in the office trying to figure these things out and having other people. That's why we do this, so we can get the feedback and generate new ideas.
No snake sales.
No snakes?
Exotic pets.
Do you want to prohibit that?
Personally, because my wife will buy them.
But think of the sales tax that would be generated. Some of those puppies, go for a lot, and the snakes and stuff.
All right, I'm going to, one last one. So on the outdoor display of goods, I think we have some great limitations on what that would be, not blocking the entryway to the business, the pedestrian way, the public right-of-way, and so forth. But the part I could envision was like using a part of the parking lot right up against the sidewalk or something like that and having outdoor display out in that. Would that be prohibited somehow?
You know, I'm going to have to think about that one because we do allow a limited amount, but that wasn't really what we were envisioning. We were envisioning like, let's say it's a little thrift shop or a clothing shop or something like that, and they put a rack of clothing out on the sidewalk. You know, they're having a sidewalk sale that you would see in a traditional downtown. But their parking area, you wouldn't want them to use their parking for outdoor display because then they would have reduced their parking amount. But on a temporary basis, you might let somebody have a Christmas tree lot, even though those are not environmentally good. Just get a fake tree.
Put that in there.
Fake trees only.
Just a random
fake tree Christmas tree lot. So no trees go wasted.
What about the guy who wants to sell the tiny motorcycles to kids? Would that be prohibited under the vehicles?
He would be grandfathered in, but then once he left that property or decided to do something else for a period longer than 12 months, then that use couldn't come back in. And Allie, I think we should put in scooters. This is where we should put our scooter regulations for bird scooters. You know, the little rental ones.
Do you think we should move the regulations for bird scooters into the town center section?
I think it might be a good idea. Or at least mark them as a permitted use so that they can come in and refer them to whatever section of the code we do put it in when we put it in. Oh, yes, we've been approached by bird scooters, so the cat's out of the bag now. I don't remember what color they are. Lime is green. Spin is orange.
Oh my gosh, people are gonna kill themselves. Bird scooters on Highway 89? No. Maybe. Yeah, we put that city edge pretty close to the sidewalk.
Everywhere they go, everybody uses the sidewalks, as far as I can tell. Every time I've used a scooter and rented one, I went on the sidewalks.
You know, it is a recipe for disaster, though, because I don't know about you, but if you actually drive 50 miles an hour coming into the frontage road on Highway 89, nobody else is going that speed. They're all coming into town 60 plus, into the 45. You know, once in a while I'll see patrolmen there and all that, but that there needs to be some traffic calming coming into this, particularly if we're going to maintain this 45 mile an hour speed limit, because they're still going 60 by the time they hit that gas station, the new gas station.
We need a light at that gas station. Yeah, that will slow them down.
And ideally maybe even a lower speed limit in this core if we're going to have all these pedestrians and scooters and everything else running around. People coming through there, you know, if the speed limit, this is my rule of thumb, whatever the speed limit is, people drive about 10 miles an hour faster than that, right or wrong.
12. You can get away with 12. No, just kidding.
But anyway, I do think that you know, the speeds on Highway 89 and traffic calming coming into there is a legitimate issue, because we're going to have conflicts, particularly with those scooters.
We can still ask them. It's like when you were a kid and your mom said no, then you ask your dad, and then you just kept asking back and forth until they give up and they give you what you want. So that's what UDOT is.
Parent shopping.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We just had a win the other day. I don't remember what it was, but we got it.
Yes, sir, I have. I'm persistent.
You heard Shane. The message is getting through that we want a great separation east-west, so at least they're looking at it.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you because you weren't speaking into your microphone.
You heard Shane about the traffic study. We've been, for all 4 years I've been on the Planning Commission, we've been bringing up a railroad bridge. And message is getting there. I don't
yes.
We'll see in 3 years what the study comes out with. But
yep, they're spending the money. They're doing the EIS right now for that. So
it's happening. Who are potentially going to be affected if they develop that area. Okay. So it's that part of the line.
Huh? After 50 years.
Yeah.
He's only been 4, we've been 50.
Okay, I'm going to pull us back into this discussion so Allie can go if she's done. Do we have any other comments? I had one comment, but has this been changed since what was in the packet? Okay, so this is on page 5 under access, number 1, where it says, in these cases, the Planning Commission, it seems to be missing some verbiage there. In these cases, the Planning Commission will determine the appropriate streets or whatever will need to go in there.
I noticed that after the packet went out.
Okay. No problem. It's no problem. I assume most of those things will come through, but I know sometimes when you read something 25 times, you input the missing things without realizing it. And then are there any other? It's page 5 under access, C access, number 1, primary vehicular access shall not be from a street other than Center Street.
I've got it listed, yeah.
And then were there any other things that any commissioners wanted to bring up specifically tonight?
I would like a tiny bit more time to just review this. I think I didn't quite dive into it as much as I would have liked. Do you guys have a deadline when you'd want comments or anything by, or just within reason?
So I think that we can still take any comments on anything at each next meeting. So we'll add number 5 or chapter 5, section 5, to the mix next time so you can understand how the building types relate to the uses. And I think that'll help gel things, and then we can still address anything all the way up to the very end. So if you see something as we're going along and we get into chapter 6 and 7, go, hey, well, I remember something back in 1, or maybe we need to add a definition in 1 for this particular use, or you have a definition, but then nowhere else in the code did I see that, because I need your eyes too, as I work through this. And you're free to, you can bring them to the Planning Commission meeting, or if you want to just email them to us, and then we can highlight, hey, since last meeting we got these comments, so we found this and this and this, and these are and we'll give you a revised edition. So what I'm going to put in the next time with these is a little stamp so that you have the date of the most current copy that you have.
I had one other comment on page 7, number 17, gross floor area. The sentence that follows that is very, very long. Lots of commas. So I don't know if that can be cleaned up a little bit. The sum of all the horizontal areas of a building, comma, measured by. And maybe that's the best way that it can be put in there, but if you're trying to understand all the things, it's a long, long sentence.
The measured part in a separate sentence. We could say...
That was my thinking.
Blah, 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 and then say, this is measured by...
Make that first sentence just very clear and succinct and not have it run through the whole paragraph. And then I had one comment on page 5. Sorry, now we're going back. Under lots, D, section D, number 1... where it says blocks shall typically be fronted with lots on at least 2 faces, preferably on the longest street. Do we want to put not subjective language there, or something that's not just, well, I prefer this, but the applicant doesn't prefer that, and whose preference is winning?
Let's just take out preferably on the longest street face.
Okay, just makes it a little bit easier to enforce for everybody. I think that was everything for me. And if anybody else has anything else that they wanted to add tonight, please. Speak now. All right. Allie, do you need anything else from us or anything to close up this discussion tonight?
Section
nobody has any more comments, I don't think I need anything else from you. We'll try to get the building type section to you earlier, because that one will require a lot of your review. So we'll try to get that to you more than one day in advance. and also work on incorporating all of your comments from the other sections as well.
Okay.
So that's the goal.
It looks so good. I can't believe the evolution of this over the last couple of years. It feels like we're getting it right.
Maybe if we give it another couple of years,
maybe
it'll
if we
get
have another
shorter.
Pandemic, we'll revamp our whole program again here and get it super right.
Sounds good.
It looks really good. Thank you so much, everybody, for all your work in clarifying and making that succinct and more readable and usable for citizens and for all of us. It looks really, really nice.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments or we can move on then? All right, thank you, Allie. Number five, report on city council action items.
Yes, yeah, so at our last council meeting, we had the approval of all of those village stations. So the plat amendment that vacated those 7 parking spaces, that was approved. And then the site plan for building 4 and building 5. City council was really excited to see those move forward. And we didn't have any, pushback on any of that. They understood that it's part of the development agreement, and they're just excited to have these buildings start under construction. So, and just to remember, building 5 cannot start until Eaglewood Plaza, the office building, has begun. Mackenzie called them and found out what their delay is in picking up their permit, because it is ready, and making sure they were going to pick it up before the end of this fiscal year. So when they put the building out to bid with the contractors, it came in higher than what they expected. Obviously, building costs have gone like crazy. So they're just working on additional financing and putting that in place so that they can pull their permit for the additional cost. So they're not asking to change any of the design or anything like that. They just have to structure their financing a little bit different for the construction.
Great.
So we're super excited to see those get
moving. Yeah, that's going to be so nice. Okay, and then approval of the minutes from 4/12. Did anybody have any changes to the minutes as they were written? If not, we can do a motion on the minutes.
Hi, this is Mackenzie. Mr. D. Lawless caught a couple little errors. Number one, we didn't hyphen form-based code in one of the lines, and then we also said we'll allow for regulating design standards while promoting diverse transportation options. All right, did you highlight that because of the spacing?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. There are two minor things on lines 247, 250, and 252.
That says parking instead of parking.
Oh, you have way more than I expected.
And comma after the year. And there's some extra spaces in that line, and then...
So when you make your motion, will you just say to incorporate staff changes as
incorporate
listed?
Grammatical corrections?
Yeah, and I'll make sure that I get the list over to Andrea so we don't have to go down at all. It's just spacing and, like, added S's and that kind of thing.
Okay. So in the motion, incorporate staff corrections. Whoever's going to do the motion, do that. And we are ready for that, if somebody is ready to make it.
I'll make a motion. This is Commissioner Moss. I move to approve the minutes from the April 12th Planning Commission meeting with the staff changes recommended.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Commissioner Holbrook, second.
Thank you, Commissioner Holbrook. Any comments? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 And we are adjourned.